Carrie's Couch. Carrie's Couch.
On Carrie's Couch today is a man who I am very excited to be welcoming to the East Coast Radio family. He is the brand new voice of our weekend breakfast. You might actually know him from some other stations. Darren calls him Lucky 2 plus 3. We call him Lucky Duplessis. Welcome to Carrie's Couch, Lucky.
Oh, welcome. Thank you so much. Thank you. Yeah, I'm very excited to be on the couch and, you know, I'm getting welcomed more and more into the Durban society. So, yeah, it's exciting. It's very exciting.
So, Lucky, I know that we actually today almost didn't get to record because you what just happened in your life right now? Did you cause this trouble? Did you cause your trouble?
No. It was just an accident. It was my tire blew out, but no one got injured.
Or anything.
So my tire blew out, and then next thing I'm on the highway trying to sort it out. But I'm okay now. But also I had to go and renew my license. So yeah, so it was quite a day.
Wow. So when other people are celebrating, you know, maybe getting money because it's the end of the month,
yeah,
they're like, yay, license. Yeah. And police station. Brilliant.
Yes, exactly.
All right, Lucky Duplessis, you have just recently joined East Coast Radio as our weekend breakfast host, and everyone is really excited. So for those people who might think they know you and those people who don't know you, let's get to know a little bit about Lucky Duplessis. Where were you born and when?
I was born in Kimberley. Apparently, I was born in Kimberley. And then I think between June, August, and September. So that's all I know.
Okay, so we're going to pause
because
November is, 9th of November was World Adoption Day. We're celebrating adoption this whole month. And that's why I was also super stoked that I got to speak to you today because, I mean, right from the start, I think I was born in Kimberley and I was either born in July, August, September. A little bit about your story then. I mean, before we even get into you being adopted, the earliest of you remember growing up, where were you growing up and with whom were you growing up?
So the earliest I remember is being with my dad, and then I was taken away from my dad and moved to Johannesburg. But that was quite a long journey. Like it was a few years of traveling. I remember walking a lot, and I just remember, you know, being with my dad one moment, the next moment I'm walking through what felt like the country of pretty much South Africa, and you know, this woman took me from my dad, and then I just remember there was like massive hills on either side of this place we were. And we were like on the low felt, and there was just this little small house. And we stayed there for a while. And then I kept asking her, like, when am I going to see my dad? When am I going to see my dad? She's like, no, he's coming. And yeah, then one day me and her took a trip she asked me if I wanted to go to the shops, because by this time I'd stopped speaking to her and I would just nod yes or no. And she's like, do you want to go to the shops? I said, okay, cool. We went to the grocery shops. When we came back, these two men jumped out of nowhere and they unfortunately raped her in front of me as like a 3-year-old, 4-year-old kid. And then, yeah, like she was devastated. Oh, she cried. She was going through traumatic experiences. It's hectic. Like I still remember 13 years old, later on in life after I've been adopted, left her, that I would wake up and she would scream. Her screams would be in my ear, in my head. You know? And then like we moved from there to another house. We like left and we walked for another few days. It was what felt like months. But as a kid, I mean, you don't really know how to tell time. And then we stayed with this other man, and he was weird. He was quite a bulk man, but he, strangely enough, I remember him wearing a lot of leather, which is a very strange thing that I remember. But he wore a lot of leather. And then he was quite abusive to her and myself as well. He used to hit me, used to hit her. And then one day he went to work. And when he went to work, she burned his whole place down. And we fled and we left and then we got into Joburg. And then when we got into Joburg, I still remember coming into Joburg because it was at night. And if you come from Kimberley, which is at that time, you know, back in like the 90s, early 90s, it was kind of like the flat lunch, you know?
Yeah.
Compared to where you come into Johannesburg, you have these skyscrapers and you have these big lights and whatnot. And I remember the train coming into Johannesburg and it was just the most beautiful thing. And later on, as an older kid, I would watch movies and I would hear stories of, oh, you know, I want to go to the big city in New York. And I kind of remember, oh my God, it was like kind of like that. That was my experience in that sense, me coming into Johannesburg. So that was kind of it.
That woman that you were walking with from your dad's, that woman that was attacked in front of you, who is she to you? Who was she to you?
She wasn't, I don't remember her. I remember her as just being my dad's girlfriend, I think. I think that's who she was. And she kept...
Did she kidnap you?
That's pretty much it for me. Yeah, I think that was it. I think that was it. Or she, I don't know. I just remember I didn't like her at all. I mean, she took me for my dad, which I remember as being this amazing guy.
Yeah.
I remember every morning he used to box, and I used to sit on the floor and I would play with my little toy cars, and he would box on like against the boxing, like a boxing bag. And every morning, and then he would shower, and then he would walk, and he would drop me off at, I think, my grandmother's house. But then when he would walk in the town, he would always wave and talk to everyone. And I think that's where I get my kind of personality, my bubbly personality from him, is that moment of that.
And did you ever find him again?
No. He was supposed to come 1 year when I was much older, but he didn't, and it was a big thing. And I don't know, you know, I don't know what happened. But when I moved to Florida, where we stayed in Johannesburg, she obviously, because of all the traumatic stuff that happened to her, she started using a lot of drugs, and she started hectic drugging, and she just became this really, really terrible person. And I mean, listen, rightly so, she went through a lot, and I just tried to stay away from her. And then, like, I would spend all my time at school, and then that's when my now brother and I met.
Let's jump there to school now. So you have been taken from your dad, you've gone with this woman, you've landed up in Johannesburg. The schooling, how did you even get to school initially? Like, what was the, how did you enroll in this school? How did you?
She enrolled me in school herself. And I think it was a law that the ANC had set when they got into power. The law was, it doesn't matter who the child is. If there's a child in your area, they have to be able to go to your school, even if they can't afford it. They had set that law. So then I was the closest school to me. There was actually other closer schools. For some reason, she just took me to this school. But
she
was
obviously
a great
knew
school,
what was right. I mean, like, not, I don't mean she as the human, but whatever her soul somewhere, or your soul, your whoever was looking after you, was leading you in this direction. So that's probably why.
Yeah. So then, yeah. And then I started going to school there, and I still remember doing the first test to get into the school. I had to name all the colors of the pencils, and I used to get red and blue always mixed up. And then I walked into class, and there was like all these white little children, blue hair, brown hair, blue eyes kind of thing. And then like the teacher introduced me, said, okay, who else lucky to sit next to? And everyone kind of looked at me weird. And then my brother was like, no, like, you can come sit next to me. And then that's how my brother and I met.
And how old are you now at this point?
I was five. So I was five in grade one. So I was a year too young. And then my brother was six. He was six turning seven, which you have to be in grade one.
And so Lucky, what is the name that you went into that school with?
It was Lucky.
And did you have, what was your last name?
Mosasane.
Okay, so you go in there, you meet this little Afrikaans boy who, I'm sure, like, your English and his English, how was it?
We got that actually. So I spoke English to him because I didn't understand Afrikaans.
Yeah.
And then he spoke Afrikaans to me, but I understood Afrikaans. So Kimberley, being a very colored community, I understood Afrikaans. So what was funny is, I spoke Tswana, okay? Back in the day, and I stopped speaking to Tswana because obviously I stopped speaking to Portia, and then that was the lady's name, sorry, by the way.
Okay.
So I stopped speaking to Portia, and then I forgot how to speak Tswana, because as a kid you have to repeat it continuously for it to set in your mind.
Sure.
So I stopped speaking Tswana, and then what had happened was, years later, my mom and I recently sat down together, and my mom came up with a very good idea. She said to me, she's like, Lucky, what happens if you weren't actually Tswana, but you're actually colored? Because I'm very bad at the NAC and black languages. I'm very bad at it. Like, I can't pick it up easily, you know, and for someone who spoke it, you'd think like it would come back to me kind of in a sense, but I can't at all. Like, I was really bad at, So my mom the other day said to me, she was like, Lucky, what happens? What if you were actually colored? If your mom and your dad was a colored man instead, he wasn't black man.
How does that make you feel?
I was like, oh my goodness. No. Listen, I mean, coloreds are the best storytellers. So I'm excited. I'm happy. I'm, and they're really funny people. The best comedians are colored.
Exactly.
In South Africa. You know, exactly. So I was like, a bonus, you know? So I was like, yes, please.
And is that a recent thing that your mom and you spoke about?
Yeah. My mom and I went to go see a psychologist 5 years ago. And he said to me, listen, I think what you must do is, because I was trying to find who I am. Because as a person, I believe, you know, you can't love someone. And this is when I met my my wife as well. You can't love someone if you don't know truly who you are. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So you can't. And he said, listen, to find who you are, you need to speak to your mother. You need to take the blocks that you know and connect it to the blocks that she knows to make a full picture. And then she said, she was like, yeah, she's like, listen, I actually thought about it the other day. I don't know how she came up with it. I think maybe there was a Chrikos game on and she must have put the two and two together. And it's weird that I never thought of it in that sense, because I'm like, Afrikaans came naturally to me in every way. But
yeah.
But like Zulu or also Tswana, like, it's so difficult. Like, I just, it's like, it's really, really difficult for me to pick those languages up. So yeah, my mom said maybe you were colored or your parents were colored.
You know what? Hey, we speak to people, I mean, especially when it comes to adoption stories, the adoption stories usually get as deep as like, I don't know who my parents are, or, and I've never met my mom. I have no idea if I've got siblings. But I mean, you are telling me you don't even, like, you don't know the day you celebrate your birthday. You don't know the date you celebrate your birthday. You don't even know like which box to tick. As a grown man now, do you think that that's made you just like flipping rhino skin strong? Like, you can handle this. You're a strong man. You can do this. Or do you feel like there's a part of you that is still incredibly sensitive, that is maybe now coated in this really vivacious, funny, cool guy's armor?
No, I think listen, a bit of both, you know. In a sense, it's very weird. So I'm a big family man, because I come from an Afrikaans family. My wife is also being half Italian, half Greek, but I find it that some things set me off quite easily. Like when I watched The Blind Side, I kind of cried because I also didn't know who I was. So when I see stuff like that, sometimes, like I watched an ad about some kid and then finding his dad, and I was like broken inside, and I kind of like, you know, emotionally. But then, like, my father passed away, unfortunately, last year before my son was born. And my father was a great man. You know, he was a phenomenal dad, and I didn't cry. And recently, I haven't been able to cry in the last 2 to 3, 4, 5 years. And I actually said to my wife, like, I think I maybe have to go see the counselor again. I don't know if it's something building up or something coming, like something that's, and it's weird. But like, I don't want to, and I believe in it. You know, men need to cry.
Yes.
It's good to cry. There's therapeutic, scientific fact that it helps us as human beings.
The release of hormones,
you get closure from it as well. And it's not, I'm not trying to be a tough guy or anything. It's just, I've created this exterior to not get too close to people because of what's happened to me back in the day. But I am also very sensitive in a sense that I know I want family. I want, that's why when I leave my wife for like 2 weeks and I go like do like a comedy show where in Cape Town or travel, 2 days go by and I like find my wife. I'm like, yeah, I'm freaking out. Like I'm having like withdrawal symptoms here. So it's hectic, you know. I'm a very family man, and I want to be close to my family as well. So yeah.
I know we're going all over the place now, but let's just rewind back again to your meeting up with Charles. You guys are in grade one. You obviously became very good friends. But you know what? I have lots of friends growing up, never landed up becoming part of their family. Just wondering, how did that process happen? Because when you came to school, you were still living with Portia, I believe you said her name was. Is that right?
Yeah, Portia, yeah.
At what point did Charles' family start to take an interest in you? Like, I mean, I know that you said in one of your interviews that they didn't adopt you, you adopted them. How did that process happen? And at what age did that happen?
So it was a strange process in the sense that like it kind of organically. Yeah, so my brother and I were best friends. We played together. We did everything together. But funny enough, halfway through grade one, they said, Lucky, sorry, you can't continue. You don't know any Afrikaans. You're not doing well in subjects. You're not understanding. So you need to stay behind. And Shaw will finish half grade one. And then Shaw will go to grade two. And then I'll start grade one again. And I was like, cool. Well, I was like, cool. I was a bit upset. But yeah, you know, it's cool. And then I was in the year of the guys that were in my year. But Charles and I still stayed mates. So on weekends, some days he'd be like, hey man, you want to come to my house? And I'd play at his house and I'd stay there. And then on his mom would drop me off on like Sunday afternoon, and then I'd walk home, which was like 7 km from the school. It would happen like that. And then sometimes like I would stay there in the week, like a few days, and then they'd drop me off again. And then days became weeks, weeks became months became years. And then eventually like I would go back on like holidays, big holidays. And every time I went back, Portia was just worse. Like she was just doing more drugs at home. And I used to always clean up the house, and I would pick up all the bottles that were drinking and like unbroken. Pick up like drug stuff and whatever. It was hectic. And like I only had one uniform, so I'd like wash my uniform when I got home, I'd hang it up, and then I would dry and I would wear it the next day. But like in winter it wasn't wasn't dry because it was still wet because it was, you know, cold.
So I'd put this wet
clothes on and I'd walk to school. It was a nightmare. Like, it was really bad. And then, like, I used to tell Shaw this, and then Shaw's mom, like, bought me clothes. But she'd be like, if you want, you can keep it at the school. You know, you don't have to take it home. Because, like, I'd get it home and then I'd be like, you don't need these clothes. And they'd, like, rip them up or break them. Like,
what?
It was really bad.
No, man.
Yeah. And then it kind of just organically kind of happened. And then one day I was missing from school for like a few days. I went home and I didn't arrive at school on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I think. And Shaw kept telling his mom, and then she told the school, listen, what's going on? Where he's lucky. They're like, well, they don't know. And then she's like, please give me the address. Let me just go see if he's okay. And they're like, no, we can't. Eventually, she, like, the one teacher was like, you know what? Okay, fine. So she gave them our address, and she then found the house and she drove up there, and she, like, remembers walking in, and she says it was very quiet, and like, it's like this like the long thin driveway, and then in front of the driveway is a garage, but on the left hand side of the driveway is the house. But that house is not the house where we stayed. It was just a house that was like vacant. And then, like, you'd walk in, and then at the end of the driveway you turn left, there's a gate, and then you'd walk around the garage, and sure, that's where we stayed. And she went in there, opened the door, and there I was, like, 5 days, no food, no drink.
What?
I was left. They'd, like, so Porsche had packed her stuff and left me, and then, like, I waited, and she never returned. So
how old were you at
this
point?
And she was like, I was like 10, I think. I don't know, 9, I can't remember.
Dude, I'm so sorry. There.
Yeah. And then, yeah, then that's when I started staying with them. So that's when I started staying with them permanently. And I only got legally adopted when I was 12, because when you're 12, you as a kid can decide who do you want to go with. It's like legal in the paper. So they put it in three different newspapers, three different ads, three different days. And they kind of say, like, okay, cool, we've got this kid, he's this age, this is what he looks like. If you are this child's parent, please come and claim him.
Seriously?
And then nothing came for those. Yeah. And then nothing happened for 3 days, and then boom. Yeah. That's when I got adopted in 1999.
Oh.
The 7th of November, I think.
7th of November?
Yeah. So it was like in
You actually got adopted in adoption month, 2 days before International Adoption Day. You're very on trend, hey?
Yeah. I think it is. I was actually checking it out, but I think it is, yeah.
Quick one. When that advert went into the paper, was there more of you hoping that your real mom or dad would come forward and say, lucky my child, and your dad would come and find you? Or were you hoping that Charles' family could have you?
I don't know. It was such a long process, the adoption thing, because we had to do legal tests, we had to do doctor's things, that it was kind of like being a lab rat. And it was for like 4 or 5 months that when they put the ads in the newspaper, I was just like, yo man, let's just get it done. Like, if somebody comes forward, cool. But like I was so happy just being a kid. And like, and what was weird is my mom used to always ask me stories about my past, and I never told her, because I'd always want to go outside and play. So she'd be like, no, you can go play now, just come and chat to me about this. And I'd be like, oh, okay, fine. So for me, it was just, I just wanted to play as a kid, you know?
Yeah.
So I was just happy. I think I was just happy that 4 or 5 months of, you know, prodding and prodding and all that stuff was just done. Yeah.
And when was the first time you called your new mom, your adopted mom?
That's actually a funny story. You're the first person that's asked me that. It's actually a good story, because my mom, I used to call her Tani Mariki.
Yeah.
Okay. Even after I got adopted, and she kept saying to me, stop calling me that. Call me mom. And then one day, my brother and I were really naughty. She yelled at us, and she was so angry. She said it, and then she ended. She was like, and I still told you to call me mom, and you still haven't called me mom. And then we sent to our rooms. My brother and I's room were next door, and we weren't allowed to play.
Yeah.
And then, like, I was like chilling in my room, whatever. And then my mom called us for dinner, and I went to go have dinner, and then, like, afterwards I was like, thanks mom, it was a really nice dinner, I love you, I'm going to bed. And like, that was the first time. And then she still says she remembers it, Shane. She was like, so like,
oh my gosh, I got goosies. That's amazing. So just like that, you said thanks for dinner mom. Sure, that must have been huge for her as well, hey?
Yeah, shame. Yeah, it was. Yeah, shame. Lots of it. Yeah.
What I'm also about to ask you is a little bit off, it's like on a tangent, but I think you'll understand where I'm coming from. For a man who, and you are not just an amazing man, you are a whole man complete. Your vibe is so cool. And you know what I do believe, and I hope you do too, that when we come into this world, we kind of somewhere spiritually, we know what is meant, like what's going to happen. And so that's why we can make it. And let's be honest, you and Charles and mom were meant to be together, right? But When your show at 947 was cancelled, was there a little bit of that trigger of like an unwanted boy all over again?
Like, it wasn't really that, you know. I believe that because, you know, you're always in that sense of you work hard. Like, I believe in hard work because my brothers and sisters are like that. My dad, may he rest in peace, was a hard man. My mom, even as a teacher, she was a hardworking woman. So my sisters and brothers are all about hard work. And everybody, since I was young, I always wanted to be like my brothers and sisters. So I always wanted to be, because they were all prefects, I wanted to be a prefect. They were all in choir, I was in choir. I was in chess club, I was in debating, I was in this. And then I said to my mom, like, one year, I was like, mom, listen, like, I just want to let you know, like, I don't think I'm going to be a prefect, because I was really naughty as a kid in primary school. So I said to my mom, like, listen, I don't think, like, I just want to let you know, like, don't be disappointed because I don't think I'm a prefect material, whatever. And my mom's like, no, like, you must never try to be like your brothers and sisters. You must just try to be like, be yourself. And then I ended up being head boy in my primary school, the first black head boy in Afrikaans school.
Oh my God. Congratulations.
Yeah. And then, like, yeah, that's why also I played Craven Week, and then I got a scholarship to like a private school in Johannesburg. So I ended up like really succeeding because I'd always pushed myself. But when that happened at 947, I was upset. Those feelings of neglect didn't come back. It just came back that I was like, we did a good show and we got that happened. So I was a bit disappointed in the station itself instead of the what's in it. You know what I'm saying? We weren't pushed from second place to the third place. We were pushed from, okay, cool, you guys are second best in the station, and now we are putting you on the last slot on radio. And that for me was like, it's a kick in the face. So I was a bit disappointed in that sense. So that for me, yeah, that was a bit, yeah.
So then when Greg and Lucky were over, what for you, were you like, ah, flip it, I'm done with radio, I'm just moving on? Or did you have that like dream there still, that when the East Coast call came, were you like amped? Or was it more just like, I don't want to leave radio with a sour taste in my mouth, so let me just give this a go?
No. Listen, I've always noticed, you know, the thing is, so being a Johannesburg kid, East Coast was always the radio station everybody knows, because us Varleys come down to Durban and we ruin the beautiful Durban as is in December. But we know the station because we listen to it when we're down there. And anybody that flies down there, you always turn on East Coast. It's just a radio station, you know? And then everybody, people like Graham or you guys, we know, even if you don't in Durban, if you don't live in Durban, you do know of the Breakfast Show. Like, and our country, we just know the radio presenters because we love radio. We're that kind of society. But I was like, I didn't want to give up on radio. I was like, I'm going to give it a shot. I said to Greg, because also they let me go, not him. So I said to him, he came to my house the next day and he's like, man, hey, listen, so what do you want to do? And I said, listen, bro, I'm going to give radio a chance, but I'm going to do it myself and I'm going to go. And he was like, oh man, I thought like you were going to be done. I said, no. And I was like, until they're like, Lucky, you're not good enough to be on radio, then I'm going to keep trying. For me, I love the vibe of it. I love connecting with people. I love talking to people. My favorite thing in the world is listening to stories. I love that. Like, it's such a cool thing. And you know what the funny thing is? Everyone might not have a story like mine, but everyone has a story. It might be one story, but at a party that you did something, and I want to hear that thing. That's the thing for me. So that's what I love.
So Zach, we can expect that kind of vibe on the weekend show, just like hanging out with Lucky, you chatting to us chatting back to you, a real cool weekend breakfast vibe.
Yes, definitely. That kind of vibe. I mean, I'm not going to be as good as Dan, Kerry and Sky, but I'll try.
You'll be surprised how quickly you can supersede that show. I mean, you'll be surprised. Look, I know that it is COVID times, but I cannot wait to officially welcome you with a Bluetooth hug. And honestly, we are so excited to have you. And you know what? Like, I hear your story and it feels like you can't even make this up. It's like a movie script with the most beautiful happy ending. And how many babies do you have?
I've got one. I've got one baby. Hopefully it's a boy, but he's 19 months, turning 20 months. And but I hopefully the next one's a baby girl. That's all I want. I just want a baby girl. I want to have tea parties and tiaras, man. That's all I want. So,
well, look,
yeah,
you can come and tea party and tiara with us anytime. And for what it's worth, I just want to say that to your birth mom, to your birth dad, to Portia, to everyone that was instrumental in getting you to where you are now, to who you are now, I want to say a massive thank you, actually, because your wife, your baby, your brother, your parents, your late dad, they all got to meet you the person that you are, and now we get to meet you. And it's all because of every single person that has crossed your path, whether we thought it was good or bad. So I hope that's not a bitter pill to swallow, but just thank you for being you. You're open and you're cool and you're grounded. And you know what, for a man who looks like you, and if you haven't seen what he looks like, by the way, you can go and Google him. It's quite nice to look at. For a man who looks like you, who's done so well, who's funny and sporty, you could have been an ego, like rude, and you're not.
It's always weird for me. It's always weird for me why people are dicks. I never understand that. Okay, think about it. It's actually harder to be a dick than to be nice. That's
because they haven't gone through life. They haven't experienced walking from Kimberley to Johannesburg just about. They haven't experienced seeing a woman be attacked. They haven't experienced having to sit down and say, like, who am I truly? Because when you are able to be vulnerable, you're able to go, you know what? It is what it is. I am where I am. And like, man, you've got to play nice in this life. And that's why you are wise beyond your years. And I'm very sure an incredible husband and an incredible father. And maybe one day to a little girl.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Kerry. It was awesome to be on the couch, by the way.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate it. And yes, as soon as we hopefully we'll be able to see each other and real
as soon
hugs.
As we can hug.
No COVID time hugs. Yes.
Thank you so much for coming and spending time with me on Kerry's couch. Lucky Duplessis, catch him every single weekend breakfast on East Coast Radio, KZN's number one hit music station, now featuring Mr. Lucky Duplessis. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.